my credentials for coming to Cooma to speak are that I'm a member of the Snowy branch of the Ulysses Club. Are you familiar with the Ulysses Club?
Growing old disgracefully.
And we usually start our rides at the East End Cafe, but we've got an hour and a quarter ride to get here from Queanbeyan. Last time we went to Dalgetty for lunch to the pub. Very nice too it was. Although I was in a car, because I'm a wuss. I don't go out on the bike in the middle of winter much. Because Steve gave me so much notice of our coming, I've gone through a process of wondering what to talk about. And I came up with something and I thought, yeah, all right, well, I'll talk about that. And then a couple of weeks later, I thought, I'll talk about this other thing. And then a couple of weeks later, something else happened. Only a fortnight ago, and I thought, I'll talk about that. So this is Mark 3 of today's talk. And it stems from being in church Sunday week ago, almost 2 weeks ago. But before I get to that, I need to ask a question. And if you don't answer, then it's going to be a very short session because you're doing all the work this morning. The question is, does anyone know anything about chaos theory? A little bit? A little bit? Yeah? Okay. Chaos theory is a fantastic way of understanding a lot of why the created order functions the way it does. It's also very theological. It's an insight into the mind of God, seems to me. Now, I'm not going to talk about chaos theory as such. I only want to bring it up because there are some features of chaos theory that I want to allude to. There are several... Some of you may have heard of the butterfly effect. Yeah? A butterfly flaps its wings in the Amazon rainforest. And 9 months later, there's a storm over Siberia. And the butterfly effect is the influence that that flapping of the wings in the Amazon has on a Siberian winter storm. Sounds weird, but everything's interconnected. Chaos theory suggests, well, it has some features that are just very compelling. One of its features is that it is completely random. Things just happen. I have a good mate whose son was killed in a motorbike accident. And I preached at his funeral, young bloke, 19 years old. And the subject of the sermon was his key ring. And on his key ring, he had a ring with a set of keys, but as you do, he had a something hanging off the key ring. That's an old Canberra Raiders membership badge. Well, he had a thing that says, shit happens. And ain't that the truth? Shit happens. It doesn't need to be anyone's fault, which we forget in our culture now. We want it to be someone's fault, an accident or someone slips and, you know, you see all the time on the television advertisements for lawyers. And what are those lawyers specialised in?
Compensation.
It's got to be someone's fault. And they've got to be able to be held account monetarily. Well, that's just not the case. Probably there's no one in this room who hasn't had a relative or a friend who has succumbed to some medical issue. And from time to time, that is exacerbated or caused by human error or oversight, but not usually. Usually it's just a case of shit happens. Chaos theory is a way of scientifically recognising that that is the case. The thing about, and as I said before, it's random. You can't pick how things are going to happen or why things are going to happen. And you might get what appear to be exactly the same set of circumstances, but with a different outcome next time. And that's just how it works. The world, the universe that you and I inhabit and are part of is not set in order. There aren't strict cause and effects for life or how the world functions. It just happens. Chaos theory says that the world is random, but there are odd things which it calls strange attractors. Anyone ever heard the term? Strange attractors. All of this can be represented mathematically. And the maths point to things that are, if you like, more likely to happen. But you can't quantify them or predict them. They just work out that way. Some things are more likely than other things while being completely random. It doesn't make sense, but that's the way the maths works, and the maths point to the way the world works. That's how it happens. Now, we sneak up on the thing that I really want to draw out of chaos theory this morning, and that is that chaos theory suggests a self-similarity to the world, to the universe. That is, there are things which when you look at them or when you measure them, whatever scale you look at them at, very little or very big, infinitely small or infinitely big, they look the same. Does anyone remember seeing, I was going to bring one and then didn't, a picture of a Mandelbrot set? It's a graphical representation of a very simple mathematical formula. And it's beautiful in its simple elegance. It looks in its simplest form. It's a sort of circular plotting of points with a little thing out one side, which has a smaller version of the big blob there, and then another little line of dots to a smaller one, and however small it gets, if you look at it, it's exactly the same as the bigger one, or the biggest one. So you make it infinitely big or infinitely small, it still looks the same. It is self-similar. And that's one of the features of chaos, is that it produces results that are self-similar. Now, that's the thing to remember for this morning. Because there are things in our lives which obey the principles of chaos. They're completely random, but there's a pattern which is completely random. But there are strange attractors. Things happen more often than other things, and you can't pin it down. I'll give you an example. I have a friend who is a clinical psychologist and a psychoanalyst. He has a large brain and gets paid lots of money to make a mental health assessment for the courts. So when we have lunch, I make him pay. I once said, Bruce, it's about time I sprung for lunch. And he said to me, when your stipend reaches my tax bill, you can have a turn. Well, he wrote a book about the self-similarity of pathological features of human relationships. He suggested that at whatever scale you look at the way human beings interact, they were similar. So what happened? Let's take something you and I understand about the nuclear family. Mum, Dad and the kids, or the variations on that. Mum and the kids, or, you know, that size. If things aren't going right, Bruce would suggest there are things you can look at and address that could turn that around. All right? Now, he says because these systems are self-similar, because they're chaotic in nature, in a scientific sense, the same applies the next level up. What's the next level up from a nuclear family? An extended family. If you look at the extended family of which the nuclear family is a part, Bruce is suggesting that the dynamics in that extended family will be the same as the dynamics in the nuclear family. The things that stuff this up will be the same as the things that stuff that up. And the solutions for getting this working better will be the same as the solutions for getting that working better. What's the next one up from the extended family? Yeah, in fact, we've made several jumps by the time we get to society, haven't we? Community. There's the community, then the society. Then you end up with the 6 billion people on the earth. Now, Bruce is suggesting that because this is chaotic in nature, the solution for the world is basically the same as the solution for the nuclear family. And if we go back down from that, from nuclear family, we get individual relationships. How I have twin sons. They're 34 years old. They still wrestle on the furniture. Except now they break it. They don't bounce off it anymore. And they live 12,000 miles, however many kilometres away. Whatever the issues are in my nuclear family are basically the same issues that exist between Chris and Nick. And back to us as individuals, internally, the stuff that's going on for us in here is the same all the way up the line to the 6 billion inhabitants of the earth. Now, is that true? What's your hunch?
Partly.
Okay. Equivocal agreement.
Well, I think there's certainly aspects that if you solve the problem between individuals, you'll solve the larger problem going out. As my father always said, and he used to work in public transport, people behave differently in a group, and they're panicky and pushy and rude, whereas they don't in an individual. And he knows the difference when there's a small queue of people trying to get on a ferry and when there's a large group.
All right.
He said people in a crowd, and you'd be sort of see a football riots, and there's an effect of size.
Yes, that makes sense to me. Yeah.
Particularly close proximity size.
I wonder if that feature could be incorporated into the model. My hunch is it could, but one of the things that fascinates me is that one of the things that is chaotic is coastlines. Did you know that? However big a scale you look at a coastline, it is self-similar, getting bigger and smaller. So coastlines, however closely you look at them, either from a satellite or from through a magnifying glass, where at the high water mark, they're the same. They're the same mathematics. However you look at it. And there were ways to use that fact in the science of coastlines, if you like. Just a little sidelight. Now, that was chaos. Now I want to go back to what happened 2 weeks ago. Sunday week ago, I was in church. I don't go every week because I no one pays me to go every week anymore. So I can be seduced away, you know, by a motorbike ride, for instance. But I was in church, and it was as dull as batshit. It was tedious. And I was sitting through this service thinking, oh, I'm never going to get this hour back. You know, it's like going to a really bad movie. You feel cheated. You think, I've invested. I'm starting to think about how many hours I've got left to invest in things. I'm not getting any younger. So I cherish them more. And I'm more jealous of wanting to use them in a way that I choose, that I get satisfaction and joy from. And sitting through church, because, well, that's what you do on Sunday morning, on this particular Sunday morning, was a trial. And I didn't like it. It wasn't that much better last week. Maybe I'm just getting grumpy. I don't know. But too bad. How many of you have spent years listening to sermons that make you roll your eyes? Eh? Oh, aren't we stupid? Really? Yeah. Oh, well. Anyway, it made me think, reflecting on this morning, and feeling a bit bad about it, because I thought, no, look, you ought to have a better attitude towards it than that. And I started to think, well, what did I hope for? What was I there for? And the question, what did I hope for, wouldn't go away. What needed to happen in church for me to walk out that door thinking, well, that was all right. For me, anyway, it was basically the answer to the question, what did I hope for? Now, that's what I want to ask today. What do you... Let's pick going to church. If you don't pick going to church, well, pick something else. I don't know. Depends on your life, I suppose, but going to church is something probably most of us have in common. What do you hope for when you go to church? This is where you start doing the work. What do you hope for?
It's actually your attitude when you're going in there. It's not how you... You've got to go in there as a Christian saying, okay, give me some guidance.
Can you all hear? It has to talk nice and loud.
Okay. You've got to go in there and being willing to listen to what's being said. And you can go in there truly something and go, no, that's the way it's done. Also, you can go in there going, okay, now... I'm here to make a joyful noise unto the Lord for me, and I'm here to get something out of it. Depends on how you're feeling at the time, because miracles happen. It's not just about if you go in with the wrong attitude going to church, you're going to come out there to waste of time. So it's about your attitude, how you focus your life on, and go, okay. My attitude is I'm going to go to church, not because I have to, but because there is something there, even just a song, that will speak to you.
that make sense to people?
Mm-hmm.
It does, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. I think I want to say that they're slightly different strands of a response to the same event. The attitude going in and the hope of what comes back to you. So then I don't think they're mutually exclusive. And you can go in with a good attitude and have it crueled by events. I've had that. But I've also gone in with a bad attitude and had it lifted and embraced so that I've left in much better condition. I'm glad to say that happens more than the other one. I usually find church uplifting and encouraging and an encounter with other people, with God, with the Spirit. Yeah? And that maybe that's my hope. That will be my experience. What about other people?
Well,
yes.
I like to have a laugh. I think in getting a message through, it's always a good idea to have a laugh somewhere or other.
Yeah.
I often think and wonder how Christ kept 5,000 people listening to him without saying something funny to grow. Get them to look at it a bit more carefully. Yes, I think the sense of the ridiculous and not being ridiculous is really good. And I do like to have a good laugh.
Yeah.
And I do think that that's the way to get a message through. There you are.
That's a splendid hope, isn't it?
Yes.
I was privileged. Several months ago now, I was in the UK at my son's ordination in Southwark Cathedral. And he was, and the Bishop of Southwark was kind enough to come over and introduce himself and say hello. And later, after the service, my son reported to me that his bishop said, "Oh, I'm glad I met your father. He's a bit of a character, isn't he?"
Well, there you are.
And I thought, okay, we only had about 15 words spanning 30 seconds. How did he work out I was a character? It might have had to do with the pink T-shirt I had on. I don't know. But it's similar to that. It was an interaction that tickled his fancy. And you don't have to laugh and guffaw, although that's all right too. I do a fair bit of that in church, one way or another. But something that lifts the moment and is, convivial. Yeah, I know what you mean. Yeah.
I think I expect it to be family. And in that, that embraces that laugh, it's not the less of the mask and the more of the real person.
Mm.
So that if someone does come in feeling down and not willing to contribute, hopefully it's balanced by others who are and can lift that person up. And the next week that can be reversed. That it's not a show, so that if someone makes a mistake on stage or the minister, we all have a giggle and we carry on, and there's no expectation of perfection.
Yeah, yeah. I remember, I'm a high church Anglican, right? So I'm at the altar, dancing about with the plate and the cup. And part of the Thanksgiving prayer, you lift the plate up and say something about, take this bread, and then you lift the cup up and say, take this cup. Well, I don't know why this particular morning I lifted the plate up and said, take this cup. No, he said, drink from this, all of you. That's right. I lifted up the cup and said, drink the plate and said, drink from this, all of you. No, he didn't. I said. And people were.
You woke them up.
Yeah, that's right. No, he didn't. It's, you know, the one of the things I liked about this service in Southwark was that although it was in this really old, large cathedral that went up to the sky, you know, and seemed to have, there were five bishops and 13 people being ordained and the place was full, and but it had a very light touch. They weren't, they'd done it often enough that they didn't need to bung anything on. You know, they weren't being pompous or self-satisfied, which is so easy to do. Certainly in my tribe, when we get into the cathedral, and I'm a canon, so I'm actually sitting up with the posh people in the cathedral, pulling the pigtails of the person in front of me. we can get terribly self-satisfied and pompous. But this was much more laid, well, not laid back, because they still did everything really well, you know, but there was a lightness to it, which had me leaving that service thinking, that was really cool. That was great. I suppose the fact that my son was being ordained, and although I groan and complain about, oh, fancy having a son that wants to be a bloody priest. He grew up in my household and he still wants to do that, you know. In spite of carrying on like that, I'm incredibly proud of him. Just unspeakably pleased with him. And there he was. You know, it was all coming together. So I suppose I was well disposed to that. Anyway, I think I've got off the topic. But I think you're exactly right to hope for that. Yeah. Any other things you hope for?
Yeah, I hope that we can build each other up. And share what's been happening in our lives during the week.
Yeah.
A bit like the early church.
Yeah, that's a good aspiration, isn't it? Do you agree with that?
Yeah.
Wouldn't that be great? Wouldn't you love to leave church having felt that that had happened? You'd had a real encounter. Someone had was interested enough in you to ask how are you and want to know.
Yeah, what God's been doing in your life during the week.
Yeah. People, I often maybe that's because I'm not a nice person, but I say to people, hello, and they say, fine, how are you? And I think, well, I didn't ask. I don't have time. And when people say, hello, how are you? I don't answer, because it's just a bit of social lubrication. We don't have the time, or the we don't know each other well enough for me to tell you how I really am.
You don't mean it anyway.
Yeah. So, how are you? Well, I'm crap today. And they think,
nice,
oh, what do I do with that bit of information?
Well, they don't listen and talk and walk off.
But wouldn't it be wonderful if church was a place where someone noticed if you were doing it tough? And of course, sometimes it is. Wouldn't that be cool? Wouldn't you hope for that? Now, I'm going to move on because I probably talked longer than I should have already.
Should we tell him there's a calendar?
Oh.
Well, you've got a battery limit on the phone.
I want to suggest to you that hope is one of these chaotic things. If that's true, then it is self-similar. And the things you hope for in church are essentially the same things that you hope for it as you go down into your family and yourself, your inner being, your spiritual self, and up through your wider family, your community of Kuma, our society, our nation, and our world. That you can pick any one of those and ask the question, what do we hope for? And apply the answer in all of those scenarios. And that might inform us how we respond within those scenarios. If that is our hope, then how do we participate in bringing that hope to being? So we start with what do we hope church was like? What would be my place in fulfilling that hope is the same as the question, what do we want from our planet? And what is my place in fulfilling that hope? Does that make any sense at all? Well, I think I'll quit while I'm ahead. Thank you.